You are now listening to Waiting on Reparations, a production of iHeartRadio. Yeah. Yo, knife is the illest. Don't matter any state I'm in. I'm raw like an uncut gem. This is the way I win. Rappers acting funny for money, so I don't play with them. Your favorite rappers out here making America great again. But I just play to win. Focus on the state I'm in. Stay in Tim's steel toe boots. Time to break them in. Hear it through the wire. I was steering through the fire. I was focused on myself. I'm the peer that you admire. Dope knife, lingua franca. We be preaching to the choir. It's waiting on reparations. Now the booth can retire. Nigga, take cords, swing swords like a shogun. Y'all fair, now all hail to the dope one. Waiting on reparations. Waiting on reparations. Hey, what's going on, y'all?
Hey, what's good, people?
I'm Dope Knife.
I'm Lingua Franca.
And we are waiting on reparations.
Turn that shit up. Well, what
How
is good?
Doing?
What's good with you? No, I started asking first.
Oh shit! Oh no! I'm good. You know the studio thing I've been talking about like the last month.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Like I'm finally like done. You know, fully getting that. It's been rough. I don't know why it's been so slow, but it's like, you know, one day I'll move a desk in there, and then I won't go back there for like another like week, and then you know. But finally, I've got like all the stuff in there. So it's good to go. I'm good to start using it and finally start recording at my prolific MC pace that I once had going. What about you? How was your week? Oh. Also, I'm getting prepared for that Afro Man show that I was telling you about.
Afro Man show. So. Yeah, right. August 11th, right?
August 11th at Victory North in Savannah, Georgia. So yeah, that's like pretty much preoccupying like every aspect of stuff right now. What about you?
Yeah, I mean,
more important things, I hope.
I'm back on my commission grind. We had our first in-person meeting at City Hall last Tuesday. First in-person meeting in a year and a half. And you know what? It actually felt good to be back. I thought I would be like resentful that I can't hang out with like no pants on the camera, eating snacks, turning my camera off so I can go pee mid-meeting. But actually, it was really nice being back there with my colleagues. Sense of like more of a human element. It's really easy to just hate these bitches.
Yeah, when you
sometimes
from afar.
when you're just like, yeah, and they're like, cameras aren't even on, you don't even know if they're in the meeting and shit. But it's like, oh, they're there, and you know, like, I like your raincoat, and you know, whatever, just this basic banter to bring people together to remember that we made we may differ ideologically or like in how we move through this political. Sphere, but like we're people, you know. Yeah, so it's kind of nice. It's kind of nice, not gonna lie. But yeah, that's all that's going on this end.
Yeah, you know, we're all people with our flaws and our quirks. Speaking of people with flaws and quirks,
oh boy, Sir Kanye West is back in the news again, and this week
we're gonna talk about Kanye West again.
We're gonna talk about Kanye. We're gonna be unpacking some of his headline making political stances of old. Revisit some of his old controversies, and then we're going to delve as well into his discography, which has interesting implications for politics as well.
So just, you know, before we dive into the episode and stuff, just what are your general, I don't even want to say thoughts, but what's your general reaction to, like, this new resurgence in Kanye's popularity during this album cycle for this new album, Donda, he's got coming out?
I mean, well, I wouldn't even call it a resurgence because as I kind of looked into his recent musical history, his musical output has really ramped up over the last decade, where it went from, you know, a couple of years between albums to like we're consistently getting one every 2 years, every year. Or, you know, back in, fuck, when was that? When did he do Nas's album? Shit, I'm gonna look this up.
That was 2018.
So back into 2018, you know, like producing four or five albums in a single year.
Yeah, he did Pusha T's album and then Nas's album.
Yeah.
Him and Kid Cudi did a project, didn't they? I think it was a Kids
See Ghosts in that period, I think. Yeah, and so, I mean, I wonder to what degree it does impact the quality as an old Kanye, a lover of old Kanye, as many of us are. You know, I just like don't feel as inspired by some of the newer material.
Do you think some of that's like influenced by some of how your reaction to his personal antics and stuff like that that is affecting how you're taking in the music, or do you think the music itself has dropped in quality?
Oh, for sure.
Or at least become different.
I'm far more inclined to give someone's music a chance if I think they're a cool and good person, for sure.
Yeah.
And so...
And it gets harder and harder.
It gets harder and harder when it's like, you said some whack shit, bro. I mean, on the flip side, I have not canceled Connie entirely from my discography and from my, like, you know, playlist rotations.
Well, I don't think
on account of the things he said either. It's just that I don't seek out his music just because it's on a different tip than it used to be. And also, I don't want to really encourage his shit.
Yeah. I mean, I totally agree with you. I don't think Kanye's, at least not to this point, has done anything that, like, makes what you thought of his older stuff or how you even just interpreted it any different. But I don't know. To me, as somebody who's never necessarily been like a Kanye fan, I have noticed like a change stylistically or like an approach to music making that seems like it's gotten different over the years that I've heard.
Which is what you hope, you know, if an artist stays making the same sounding music for 20 years, like, are they really growing as an artist? Are they really, like, pushing themselves? Are they really, like hitting their creative, like, peak?
Even
if you don't enjoy the new music that's coming out, that it's changing at all is a sign
of growth.
Yeah.
I 100% agree. It's just, who is that growth for, I guess? You know what I mean? Like, I have a feeling that if I were like an NBA player, or if I like hit it big in like the Bitcoin stock, if I was like a young rich person,
yeah,
I feel like I would really, really, really enjoy like what Kanye has to say his music. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We're gonna jump into that and more, because I mean we both got a lot to say on this and we also got a lot to cover. So we're gonna get into all this Kanye madness after the jump.
After the jump. So, Ye returned to Atlanta last week, the place of his birth, and held a listening party last Thursday for his new but partially unfinished forthcoming album, Donda, at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. There was about 40,000 fans in attendance, which with the Delta variant and everything, and the unvaccinated people.
All got the Delta.
Makes me kind of hella nervous, but in addition to, you know, they crammed 40,000 people in there to experience the album live, the event was also streamed exclusively on Apple Music and is said to have broken the record for Apple Music live stream with 3.3 million people across the world tuned in to listen to the new album. Go for it, yeah, it's fine.
That same evening, the Atlanta City Council issued a proclamation honoring Kanye West with a citywide holiday in his name. Kanye West Day, they call it. That's right. July 22nd is now officially Kanye West Day in Atlanta. I want that to sink in. I want it to sink in and marinate just for a second. Now, this was presented by the city councilor for the District 5, Natalyn
Archibong.
Natalyn Archibong, who is currently running for city council president.
And she probably thought this was going to be like we'll proclaim July 22nd, Kanye West Day. I'll get a great photo op with Kanye, put it on my campaign, you know, card or whatever. And boost my standing in the district. Little did she know ahead of time that Kanye would be wearing pantyhose over his head and face for the event's duration. And so the photos of them together, of him delivering the proclamation to Kanye, he looks like he just either has some kids in the back of his van or stole some gold bars from a Swiss bank.
So
he
was recently at something in Paris with a little baby and the basketball player James Harden. Mm-hmm. And there was a picture taken of them all like all sitting together, and he's got the mask on over his head, and little baby and James Harden are just looking at him like, yo, what the fuck is even going on right now?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's like this whole thing. And that's, I guess, why I was saying, like, resurgence in popularity. I guess that was a wrong way to phrase it, because it's not like he's ever lost the popularity.
Not necessarily ever.
But it's just like, you know, if a hip-hop artist can't at least see any kind of a hit after, like, Kanye's run the last, like, 3 years, you know what I'm saying? Then I think we're at the point where, like, if an artist, like, establishes enough of a fan base that they're pretty much bulletproof to everything. And I'm not talking about, like, canceling, you know what I mean? But it just seems like even people who were like, oh, man, I don't like that Kanye did that, or I don't like that Kanye said that, like, right now are like, oh, man, I can't wait for this album. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. So it's almost like his career is bulletproof, you know?
At this point, I guess. I really don't know what he could do. I really don't know what he could possibly do.
And we're obviously going to get into what he's done. But, yeah, I can't... At this point, I can't think of it, really. Like,
yeah.
I think these people are all in the tank. So, Dr. Kevin James, the president of Morris Brown College, a private Methodist, historically black liberal arts college in Atlanta, Georgia, also presented Wes with the... How do you say that?
Meritorious.
He also awarded Kanye West with the Meritorious Service Award for his mother, Dr. Donda West. For his mother.
Yeah.
So he said, Dr. Donda West started her career at Morris Brown College as a professor and eventual department chair of English. We wanted to convey the utmost respect that we have for his mother's legacy.
So, in addition to, I didn't know that Kanye was born in Atlanta. I also didn't know that his mother was the department of the chair of English at, like, an HBCU.
Me neither.
Which makes sense because, I mean, something that was so iconic about Kanye when he made his breakthrough was his, like, aesthetic that he broke away from, like, the gangsta thug life kind of thing. And, like, learning more and more about his history, it's like, well, that just, like, authentically wasn't him. Like, he was kind of like a middle-class-ass dude. And, like, was just, like, that's a... And I guess, like, normalized, like, that as a way to be black that is fine to be. Well, you know what I mean?
I guess that's what makes me wonder about, like, Kanye is because, like, a lot of his early stuff, like, his early aesthetic... very much was like steeped in that sort of like no nonsense, unapologetically black, like I don't fuck with the bullshit type of shit. And it's just like, I don't know, I feel like if I were like a Kanye West fan like that, because like I said, I don't know like his whole discography, I don't know like all of the classic lines from all the Kanye songs and stuff like that, like, but it feels like everything about him is kind of has to be called into question now, doesn't it? Like you kind of have to reassess like a lot of like past statements. It's like, did he really mean that? Like, what was really behind him saying George W. Bush doesn't care about black people in SNL? If like we see what he's doing now,
I see what you're saying. And it's so funny because like you're like, oh, like you're posing the question and also saying like, if I had that level of investment, I would like want to interrogate that. And my end, as like a somewhat Kanye fan, I'm like, oh, maybe I can answer this one. Nope. No, I can't. Because I actually don't care that much. Yeah, I don't care as surprisingly as I thought I might. I'm not really going to read into it. A whole great deal. Going to be real with you. But so, he was awarded some accolades, both from the academic community in Atlanta, as well as the... city council, which I find hilarious, in upcoming weeks, or I guess when I go away for a little bit later, like September-ish, I got some episodes stockpiled for y'all, so I got an interview with someone who's in Atlanta politics that I'm excited to share, and so just like always, as always like a spectator of Atlanta politics, it's just hilarious to see the city council just do some weird, random, like, silly shit like this, yeah. Like... fucking naming it Kanye West is pandering Kanye to super West, rich yeah. people. It's like very, very on brand for them. So in addition to all this, you know, happening around his listening party last Thursday, Kanye West is now apparently living in Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Fans took to social media on Saturday with photos of a man at the Atlanta United game who's dressed in the same outfit that West donned at his Thursday listening party. Face camouflaged in pantyhose and all. In videos from the game of this individual, the man is shown escorted around the stadium with a large security detail and seemingly responds, you know, kind of like waves and looks up when fans call out like, Kanye, Kanye, Kanye. So it could be a weird hoax, but I'm inclined to believe it was really him. And increasingly, reports are confirming that Kanye and his team have created a studio space, a living quarters, and even have a chef on call to prepare his meals inside the Mercedes-Benz
It's stadium. Definitely not a hoax. I think
it's real. At first, I was like, maybe some guy just dressed up like him and went to the Atlanta United game to be funny. But like, it's increasingly seeming like, nah, this is legit shit.
Man, I saw a video on YouTube of Kanye West and Jay-Z recording the Watch the Thrones album in a fucking castle in Australia with Russell Crowe sitting in the background watching. Like, trust me, this nigga's living in Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Yeah.
He's all the way up in there, yeah. Just to recap, since, you know, you've got some of these city officials kind of attaching themselves to Kanye West with all the accolades and stuff, let's just do a little quick stroll down memory lane to, like, you know, like, 7 months ago and shit, about like what Kanye's political involvement has been as of late. Months removed from Kanye having a sorta kinda presidential campaign that was filled to the brim with GOP operatives who were making, albeit stupid and misguided or whatever, but on their front, a genuine earnest attempt to shave the margins of the 2020 election in favor of Donald Trump. We all remember the, at this point, infamous Oval Office visit that, I mean, there's a lot of shucking and jiving going on. That's just all I'm going to say in that Oval Office visit. What else? We've got him championing Candace Owison's Blexit strategy, or in other words, her imaginary plan for African Americans to make a large exodus, not just from the Democrat Party, but into the Republican Party and voting for Trump. And his advocating for this whole Blexit thing earned him the praise of Alex Jones. You want to read that Alex Jones quote?
Oh, God. Nothing would make me more happy. I just assumed he was a Democrat and a globalist, said Alex Jones. He has a lot of courage and he's a maverick. Kanye West has guts, talent, you name it. I apologize to him for being ignorant myself. Aw, so sweet.
Alex Jones also later on.
I bet they would have, like, Alex Jones and Kanye West in the club. I would pay money to be near that. Not too near, like, just kind of, like, close enough to, like, yeah, binocular distance.
Kanye West in, like, pantyhose with shirtless Alex Jones next to him.
In the club? Oh, hell yeah.
Foaming at the mouth?
Oh, my God. I would pay to be, like, just close enough to just see, but not be at risk of physical harm.
This is the same Alex Jones who just recently said that there's genetic differences between the intelligence among racial groups, and obviously he believes that on average white people are genetically smarter. That's the same Alex Jones that you know Kanye West is getting the praise from.
Great. Trump's former campaign manager and editor of right-wing news site Breitbart even expressed wanting to bring West on as a columnist after his slavery comments that we are going to get into a little bit later. So that's Kanye's people for you. You got Alex Jones, Breitbart news editors, former campaign staff for Trump.
All sorts of freaks and goblins coming out of the woodwork.
Candace Owens, fucking freaky ass. Yo, nothing had made me sadder, though. Okay, quick detour on Candace Owens. I was seeing on Twitter, this was a while ago, but she, like, posted pictures of her baby, right? And I know. And her fan base, like, who she, you know, she thrives off of, like, feeding and validating people's racism. Like, in the comments, so many people were like, oh, well, that's unfortunate that you have, like, a, you know, an unpure blood or, like, whatever sort of, like, because it's, like, a mixed race child.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's like, it sucks the way that, like, mutts turn out. And, like,
I mean, yeah, you
saying like people who, like, you know, follow her because they, like, love her work because she is a racist, being racist about her baby in the comments on her post. Because they're racist. And I was just like, wow, to be that in the sunken place, I don't know how she even psychologically just manages to live through what she has done.
But that's the thing for like those token right wingers and stuff like that. If you look through their comment sections, it's all like that. Like Candace Owens' comment section is like that, where it's like, oh, like, yeah, you know, your fans are all racist and don't really like you. You're just spreading propaganda. You look on Blair White's comment section, there's mad transphobes in there. Ben Shapiro always has like Nazis that hate him because he's Jewish in his comment section. It's like reaping what you sow type of shit. But they're grifters at the end of the day, so they don't care. You know what I mean?
Like, to sell yourself to that degree. I mean, I understand to like do it for the money or whatever, but to subject yourself to that like level of, not from people that disagree with you, but from the people that support you. Mm-hmm. Like, shit, bruh. So, yeah. So, Candace Owens, rare breed of black person.
Dollar bills.
Dollar bill, y'all. And
so, we're going to get into some of Kanye West's most ridiculous statements and antics in the political spectrum right after the jump.
So we're back, and I don't even know where we should start, but I guess we could start. He's been just doing wild shit for years, but it's becoming, I feel like it's becoming increasingly political in recent years. I mean, perhaps everything has become more politicized in the Trump and post-Trump eras. I mean, he did the basic shit with like the Taylor Swift thing, da da da, other controversies.
I mean, it was like regular celebrity bullshit before, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and now like, now he's up. So, okay, let's start with the time that Kanye said that slavery was a choice in his interview with Charlamagne the God. So, he said, when you hear about slavery for 400 years, that sounds like a choice. He said, you were there for 400 years and it's all of y'all. It's like we're mentally imprisoned. He later on clarified, of course, I know that slaves did not get shackled and put on a boat by free will. My point is for us to have stayed in that position, even though the numbers were on our side, means that we are mentally enslaved. Which, you know what? I'm not even gonna, like, okay, hear me out. I feel like Kanye has a point. In that, we have previously on the show, listen here, just hear me out. Previously on the show, I've discussed, like, the Haitian Revolution, and things like that, where the numbers were on the side of the slaves, and they rose up and, like, ended slavery. You know, like, it's not a historically unprecedented act. I'm not gonna go so far as to blame slaves for slavery. Like, oh, well, you know, they're mentally enslaved. It's their fault that this happened, you know. But, like, the point that he's making, that, like, the numbers were on our side and, like, and slaves, like, I mean, there was, like, Nat Turner's Rebellion. There were various, you know, smaller slave rebellions that got squashed. But, like, it is kind of surprising that, like, it never managed to pop off here the way it did in places like Jamaica or Haiti, where people were just like, we're not having it, and they just kind of ended the institution of slavery by force.
Well, I mean, I think it probably would have had to have been just on a larger scale than it ever was able to, you know what I mean? Than was ever able to happen for it to really pop off. But regardless of the point, because I hear the point that you're making, my issue is just Kanye West is like a multi-$100 million human being. So he's got handlers and people, and he himself, I don't even want to not give him credit. He himself is a savvy, you know, media navigator and stuff like that. Kanye West knows full and damn well that the amount of people who heard that clarification and that nuanced explanation pales in comparison to the amount of people that heard him say, 400 years, slavery, that sounds like a choice. He didn't say the second one first.
Yeah.
You know, so like, I hear it, I get the point, but if that's what we were talking about, then I would be able to be here and say, man, I think people are being kind of unfair to Kanye, because if you listen to what he was saying, he was really saying, that's not what he said though. And like, I saw the interview, he could have said all of that shit, and it.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder to what degree it was that he continued to think about it and think about how he could make it sound better.
Better because of the backlash.
Because of the backlash, and came back with something that was like halfway imaginable. I was like, okay, yeah, the numbers were on our side. It's shocking there wasn't a slave uprising broad enough to end the institution of slavery in the United States at any point.
But these things, they have to work in, like, you know, it can't be, like, taken in a vacuum. Kanye West making these statements on their own is one thing. Kanye West making these statements on his, like, and then also fucking with Candace Owens, and then also, like, 2 years later, doing the shit with the GOP. Like, all of it together just paints, like, a really kind of, like, fucked up picture to me, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, and ultimately, I mean, with some of the other things we're going to discuss today as we move on to, you know, look at some of what he said during his presidential campaign, like, if you take it, I guess, out of the political context in which we know Kanye to be operating, he's fucking with Trump people, he's hanging out with Candace Owens and Alex Jones. If you just, like, look at face value at some of the things he said, it's not as crazy as it could seem. But once you, like, look at it through the lens of, oh, you wear a MAGA hat and fuck white supremacists and shit, like, it's impossible to divorce it from that ideology. Like,
you heard about the shit that they're trying to pass in Texas, right?
Which one? The
anti-critical race theory shit.
Oh, yeah. Trying to pass,
It's like, oh, you can't teach the I Have a Dream speech, and you can't talk about Native American genocide. You can't, like, slavery.
You can't say the KKK was bad.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You can't make a moral judgment on, like, white supremacy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
We might not know this now. We might not know it 10 years from now. Somebody way smarter than me will have to analyze it and find out how incrementally these things affected it. But there's a ton of right-wingers who, like, oh, word. A famous rich black guy reinforced some like, things that I wanted to believe and said that slavery was a choice. Yeah. That shit trickles down over time. You know what I'm saying? Like, people hear that shit. I mean, look, I know we want to all believe that it's like we're all, like, filled with a bunch of, like, smart people, but it's actually a bunch of stupid people with, like, smartphones. You know what I mean? And, like, people are susceptible to believing shit that they want to hear. It's just a fact. We know this. And when you've got the internet and social media just pumping the whole concept of disinformation and propaganda and, like, just giving it, like, a boost of meth, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You've got, like, that in turns, it's 2018, you've got right-wingers being like, oh, that black celebrity said slavery was a choice, and then you just fast forward 3 years later and it's like, I think we should make the I Have a Dream speech banned. Let's make that law now, you know?
Yeah.
So he plays
it does.
Shit like this plays its part, is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
These are big.
It's not insignificant. It does
exactly.
Definitely, like, rebound in the discourse and get picked up in other places where it does serious harm, for sure. There's that, and then I was thinking about the anti-abortion comments he made during his first presidential campaign rally in South Carolina. You don't know about in South Carolina last summer? Okay, so he got out there. And he cried and revealed that he said, my mom saved my life. My dad wanted to abort me. My mom saved my life. There would have been no Kanye West because my dad was too busy. So, like, talking about how he was almost not, he was almost aborted. And then he continued sobbing, talking about, I almost killed my daughter. And he goes into extremely personal detail about his intimate conversations with Kim Kardashian, about whether or not they were going to pursue parenthood and, like, have North.
Did she know he was gonna do that?
No. He even said, I don't care if she divorces me after this speech. Like, yeah.
What?
Really bad. He later apologized to her for saying, like, very, very intimate stuff that no one, I think,
they're divorced now, like, right? Is that
they
officially
divorced?
Official?
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't
hear about this one. What?
He was like, she had the abortion pills in her hand and, like, got real, like, very deeply personal about their conversations around having North. And so he then went on to propose that
that's not cool, though, right? I'm sorry,
Oh, that's not all right at all.
All right,
no.
Like, word, like.
No, 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 no. No. Yeah, what?
I mean, I would think that in this climate, some shit like that should have made it only like 20,000 people in that stadium instead of 40,000.
Well, yeah, so definitely. So this is again an instantiation of like the thing I was discussing previously, where it's like, okay, so like the media frames these as like anti-abortion comments, which like I think as a person you're totally allowed to like feel this way if you want to on an individual level. Like, you know, feeling regret about almost, you know, having abortion and then you're glad you didn't, or like whatever about your own circumstances, you're glad to be alive because your parents didn't make that choice. Like, you're like on an individual level, you're absolutely allowed to feel that way. I wouldn't classify these as anti-abortion comments in like a policy sense as much as it's a personal stance of like, this is something that he does not agree with. Granted, again, it's within the context of he's been hanging out with Trump.
Exactly.
He's hanging out with Candace Owens. It's supposedly a presidential campaign rally.
Consider,
and so it's extrapolated to be like, oh, this is a policy stance of yours.
Because consider, Lauryn Hill has that same stance.
Right, right.
We're not getting on Lauryn Hill because Lauryn Hill's not fucking with Steve Bannon and shit. You know what
right,
I mean?
Exactly, like, so, exactly.
So we can take it as a personal stance and not as like some fucking plausibly deniable political, you know.
Yeah, and position. So, especially when you put it in the context of, so Wes, so he tells these really personal stories about his own debates around parenthood, and then he proposed that there should be no more Plan B, which sounds really scary, but then he proposes a Plan A, which is $50,000 per year to help women take care of their child, and he said that it takes a village no matter how much money you have, and that society has to be set up for single mothers to never... society has been set up for single mothers to never have a village, which like is a pretty, you know, progressive like piece of policy. He later went on to say he did not support making abortion illegal. He just wanted to offer people another option in the form of financial support for raising their kids. And so like I've heard this argument very often on the left. Like, if you're pro-life, then like be pro-life after the child is born. Like, make sure they have, you know, universal pre-K and good schools, and make sure the parents are adequately supported, and, you know, make sure they have health care, da 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 da. And like, conservatives generally don't want to talk about that part. It's like, well, have the child, and then you're a welfare queen, and we hate you, and we wish you death, and like, you know, all this crazy shit. But like, actually saying, like, if this existed, if, like, you could get $50,000 a year if you were, like a new mother, like, imagine how the abortion rate would actually drop if people were like, oh, you know what? I can maybe handle this.
So I'm not going to be, like, a fucking troll and just like, oh, everything that he says is bad because I didn't like this and that. So, yeah, that sounds good. What I will say to that, though, what I will add to that, though, is I want to see him say that to Steve Bannon. I want to see Kanye West say that exact position to Candace Owens and see what their reaction's going to be. And to see if Kanye holds that same position. You know what I'm saying? To see if it stays consistent. Because, like, I can definitely picture a Republican politician saying that they're for that and getting booed out of the fucking building. In today's current Republican climate. So, yeah.
Well, zero Republicans voted for the child tax credit that started hitting people's bank accounts July 15th. That is, like, pretty much, like, a scaled-down version of what Kanye was talking about. Of, like, give families $300 a month to, you know, buy diapers, pay for childcare, buy animal crackers, whatever, for kids, so that, you know, I mean, not so that fewer people, I mean, obviously the kids are already alive, so it's not like it's factoring in the choice, but it's this idea of providing financial supports for families so that it's like less, so like the hardship is no longer factored in for people that are in that situation that he was, you know, or his mom was in. You know, I think that if we had stuff like universal pre-K, if we had stuff like like Medicare for all, like dealing right now, like I'm gonna lose my current insurance at the end of the month, and I'm having a baby on August 20th, and so like that whole thing, I can completely understand why somebody would be like, nope, not having kids, not dealing with that shit. Like, imagine how expanding all these, like, ooh, socialist supports, like, would actually get people to, like, maybe have more children, you know? Republicans run from that shit. They hate it.
They hate that shit. So, I mean, like I said, I 100% agree with that. I mean, I even, like, agree with literally what Kanye was saying. Like, if there was just...
I agree with you that, like, yeah, if you put him in a room with Candace Owens and have him say this,
yeah,
they might get into a fight. On the flip side, I feel like if you put him in a room with Steve Bannon and say that, like, a lot of these people, like, because, you know, with the whole, like, Kanye going to see Trump and hanging out in the office and stuff, like... that was just, let's manipulate him. Let's get the photos and let's and so they'd be like, and so you put him in a room with Steve Bannon or whoever, and Steve Bannon would be like, fascinating, great. Well, then they'd snap the pictures, and then they'd be like, okay, how are we going to manipulate Kanye into actually, like, doing some fuck shit for
just
us.
Just bringing back up that Trump thing. It's just when you think of, can you imagine what that moment could have been?
Mm-hmm.
Like, one of the most, like, what's the word I'm looking for? One of the most outspoken hip-hop artists is in the Oval Office with a current sitting president of the United States. Mm-hmm. All of the world's cameras are there watching. And you can, and you're politically savvy and media trained, and you've been a celebrity for a decade at this point, over a decade.
Yeah.
Can you imagine what that moment? Can you imagine if that was lingua franca? What would Mariah Parker, the human behind the artist lingua franca, have used to make that moment? Regardless of whatever you had to do to get in there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You're in there. What would you have made that moment as opposed to the shucking and jiving that we saw?
Well, I can imagine, because I've spoken frequently on the preparedness for political life that comes with having been a member of like the hip hop community, particularly with regards to like freestyle and like battling and stuff like that. Like, sometimes you get in a mode where you're like, I'm not exactly sure what I'm gonna do when I get in there, but I trust myself. Because you stepped on stage and started ranting, or you forgot your lyrics and you freestyled them or whatever. And so I while like, okay, Kanye is like media trained, he absolutely went in there, was just like, I'm not sure what I'm about to do, but I got this.
Yeah.
That's the only explanation for what happened. He wasn't like, on my agenda at 11:15, we will pivot the topic to lithium mining in Bolivia. I got this. And he just went in there.
I don't even think it had to have been that thought out. I just think that, like, he probably could have gotten... I don't even know. You know what? I'm not even smart enough to articulate it. But I just can't imagine that I would have been in that situation, and that under any circumstances that Donald Trump would come out of it smiling. Just can't. And you know what? And I'm not even going to put that on like some Trump shit. I don't see myself being in a room like that with any sitting American president and them coming out of it like, thank you guys for putting me in a meeting with that person. Like, thank you guys.
They carted me out. They carted me out. Yeah. Zip tied at the ankles.
With a gag in my mouth. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So that shit is the real funny style shit right there.
Frankly.
All right, so what else? Let's get back a little bit more into some of his pro-life comments. This is from last summer as well.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. So he said that when asked how to fund Plan A, the $50,000 per like single mother, he suggested that Israel and Africa would fund the concept.
Build the wall 2.0.
I don't know, yeah. Which sounds hilarious. If you think about it, the United States provides Israel with about $3.8 billion in military aid. At least they did in 2019. It's probably more now. And Israel also benefits from around $8 billion in American loan guarantees annually. So it's like, okay, once again, like, he's saying some shit that's kind of off the wall, but what if his real pain is back? They can absolutely give every expectant mother $50,000. So not missing the mark terribly. But
it's more into the theme of it's like it's not like the dude is like a rambling lunatic or anything like that. That's not making any sense on anything that he says. You know, it's just taking into account all the different pieces of everything.
Yeah. But let's get into discussion of his discography after the jump.
Where do we start? We are going to start where Al happened. I think that definitely he was making beats for a long time. We all know about the 98. I mean, what do you know about making, what is it, 20 beats for 60 beats for six summers or some shit?
Yeah.
What was the line?
Oh, yeah, he had that line. It was on Spaceships.
Yeah.
Lock yourself in a room doing five beats a day for three summers.
Yeah,
that's a different world, like three. Yeah.
I said 60 beats for. All right. Oh wait, there's the one that the kid that made that deserved that made back. Yeah. Oh man, I remember the first time I heard that. I was just like, ugh. So we know he was making music for a long time, but Kanye West pretty much jumped into the national spotlight with the 2004 album College Dropout.
The intro for dessert. Somebody order pancakes. I just sip the scissor. That right there.
Yeah, I mean, he was sort of like the in-house beat maker for Rockefeller for a while, working on other people's projects.
Jay-Z, Memphis Bleak, yeah, that whole crew.
Apparently it was like, hey guys, like put me in, coach. Like, can you sign me to be a rapper? And they were like, whatever, bitch. Get back in the dungeon and keep making beats. They like were not... For like years, we're not interested in signing him to do his own like full-length studio album, which is I find hilarious. And I think what ultimately like stands out about Kanye's legacy, I mean, musically, there's a lot of other stuff we will remember about him now, as we have discussed. But he's a prolific and ingenious producer. Like, he's not actually that special of a rapper, you know. His ingenuity with beats, both in the way that he broke the mold with his production around the College Dropout era, and even still how he's like progressed, and it, whether you like it or not, whether you appreciate the way his style has changed over the years, that it has evolved so much. Like, you know, he's just been, you know, he's just produced dope shit, frankly.
Well, I'm usually always like a sucker for rapper producers, and you know, there was a, even though I was, you know, never like super into his stuff, there was like a aura of that I really dug. That was like, oh man, he's like rapping on all the songs and he's making the beats, and that's like really cool and shit. But
Kanye,
like, he embraces like the whole, you know, the collaborative music making, like, you know, that pop music sort of thing. So I kind of have to question, you know, some of the moments that I've heard when you said that he's really kind of a so-so rapper. Like, there's definitely been moments that I know I've heard Kanye as a rapper that I felt like, oh man, that was really fresh. But I also know for a fact that Sahai the Prince writes some of his stuff, you know what I mean? And that he's had writers throughout the year. So it's like, I don't know what of it. Not that it makes it bad. It just means, you know, I don't really fuck with it on that. This came from Kanye sort of vibe.
And I'm also very skeptical of like people who are already in the industry or have ties and like capital back, like the backing of like music industry capital, like how that then allows them to get good at a craft. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that in the years since, I mean, like, Beyonce was probably a great singer in the Destiny's Child era, but because she's got millions of dollars from Columbia or Universal, whoever, behind her, she can afford the best, she has been able to afford the best vocal coaching in the world to get to the pinnacle that she is now at. Same with choreography. Like, oh, she's an amazing dancer. It's like, yeah, if you have people paying for the best choreographers in the world and the best personal trainers imaginable to ensure that you are a great dancer, you're gonna become that. And so, like, the fact that Kanye was already in the world of music through being a producer,
it makes the story less impressive.
Yeah, and afforded the opportunity to grow. There's like this quote about Einstein, thinking about like how many Einsteins exist, but then like their brilliance is just like, you know, they work in a cornfield or they work in a shoe factory their whole lives. Like, and their brilliance is never allowed to develop.
If you grow up playing sports in a rich country, then it's like you have more opportunity to get the best nutrition and the best training from when you're a little kid, as opposed to if you're athletically inclined and you're in a village somewhere and you don't get that same coaching and nutrition, and you never get to develop into the athlete that you could possibly be because of your circumstances. Nah, same concept.
Exactly. So that's why I don't, Kanye is to me a so-so rapper who has moments of brilliance where it's like, oh, that was really cool. But I fucking hope so. I hope you're at least occasionally able to do some cool shit, because you're surrounded by all of this creative stimuli and like access to resources that you need to like become a good wordsmith.
It's not necessarily a rags to riches story.
Yeah, I don't feel the same way about him as I do as someone like Kendrick or
you can't be like J.I.D. You dropped your first album after the way it's presented is almost he dropped his first album after years of grinding as the in-house Rockefeller producer.
You poor thing. Oh my God. Slaving away in the basement of Rockefeller.
Grammy nominations before anyone knew who he was.
Oh my God. Are you okay after all of those Grammy nominations that you received in the dungeons of the Rockefeller studios?
But we digressed from the album, because College Dropout was and is a classic hip-hop album, in my opinion. The whole aesthetic, the whole like college kid aesthetic, I'm not like a gangster like the rest of these guys. I mean, you gotta remember, this is 2 years removed from 50 Cent taking over the world, so G-Unit, gangster rap was kind of on on a little early 2000s resurgence of gangster rap, Dipset, all that shit, D-Block, which I love, you know.
And then on his personal blog, Kanye said that he was most inspired by the Miseducation of Lauryn Hill in the production of The College Dropout, and listened to the album every day while working on the project, which I think you can hear. You can like totally hear once you know that, you're like, oh yeah, that makes sense.
It definitely sounds like it's coming out of that vein of like, you know, you remember like when a bunch of rappers had sort of a tie-in to like the neo-soul sort of like thing. I know this was several years after that, but it had that sort of vibe to it where he was like hanging out with Erykah Badu and Andre 3000 and The Roots, and they all kind of seem like they were part of like the same sort of clique, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And so up next he had Late Registration, which I learned recently, his first four albums were meant to be a tetralogy about higher education. So there's College Dropout, there's Late Registration, there's Graduation. There's supposed to be a fourth one, also on the theme of, you know, college, of graduating, of making it in the world of higher ed. But unfortunately, in 2007, West's mother, Donda West, who we mentioned earlier, passed away at the age of 58 from complications from liposuction to mammoplasty surgery, which actually then inspired a law named after her, signed by then California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, the Donda West Law, which made it mandatory for patients to receive medical clearance through physical examination before undergoing elective cosmetic surgery.
So what were your thoughts on Late Registration?
I mean, I do see like these first three albums as like a phase, like a wave, you know, very similarly styled. Graduation, he kind of starts to peel away from the neo-soul kind of feel of the first two.
Late Registration have Gold Digger?
Yes, it did.
Okay, yeah. So
he starts feeling himself a little bit, you know.
I don't think I was jumping off of the train then. Whichever album had the Daft Punk one, the Bigger, Faster, Stronger.
Oh, you mean like Stronger? Stronger was on Graduation. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. See, that's when I was like, oh.
So, yeah. So let's actually, I'd love to get into that, because with Graduation, after spending the previous year touring the world with U2 on their Vertigo tour, Wes became inspired watching Bono open the stadium tours every night with like incredible standing ovations, and started to seek out composing like anthem rap songs that could operate more efficiently in large stadiums and arenas. So like that sound like on Stronger and like some songs like that. Like he had like had a taste of like world fame and was like, I need to start making music for this performing in this particular context.
As opposed to making that audience like what he was doing.
Yes, exactly. Which is really
putting it out there.
Yeah. You also mentioned 50 Cent earlier. It's funny about Graduation. They had coinciding release dates between Graduation and 50 Cent's Curtis.
I remember
and
that.
So, yeah, and so remember they had the publicity over the ideas of a sales competition. You remember all that shit? Yeah.
They had a little PR stunt where they were competing to see who would have the biggest opening weekend.
Right.
And 50 then, Cent was dominating, and Kanye was kind of the, like, from a sales perspective, like 50 Cent was number one and Kanye West was number two. So they kind of, I don't know whether they coordinated it to drop on the same week, but because their albums were dropping on the same week, they played up that competition in the public eye. So they were talking about it on talk shows, websites, interviews, and stuff like that. Like, oh yeah, you guys watch, Curtis is gonna smash Graduation. And eventually Kanye won that.
Eventually Kanye did win that, yeah. Well, they had record-breaking sales for both albums, I think, as a result of the, you know, fabricated feud. But Kanye did end up winning the fight between those two. So it was like the battle between, you know, the prevailing stereotype, I guess, of like gangsta rap versus this new pink polo wearing, suburban tinged like flavor that Kanye was bringing. Like, which one will survive? And he really broke the mold and like showed that, all right, this is the new paradigm.
Even that is only in reputation, because this is like 2008 or 9.
Yeah.
And we got to remember the 50 Cent that he's competing with is pretty much making the same type of music Kanye West is making at this point. I mean, we're talking about the album that had Ayo Technology with Justin Timberlake. That was 50 was pushing that. That's what they were going up against each other. So it's not like 50 was pushing the hardcore gangsta street shit against Kanye, you know what I'm saying?
Facts.
But on a side note, somebody who was like a 50 Cent fan back then, 50 losing that little competition with Kanye did cause him to make a underground album called War Angel. It's his best album. Like, he completely just abandoned all like commercial ambition for his next project and just like straight up released like an underground like hip hop album independently that is like his best work. I recommend 50 Cent's War Angel if you like 50 Cent.
Damn. Just learned something new today.
Hey, I'm full of useless trivia. So this brings us to his next project, 808 and Heartbreak.
Yeah, so he broke off from, he was gonna do another album in the theme of higher ed, but grappling with the death of his mother, he decided to take it, you know, his work in a dark direction. This was the part, I think this coincided with when the whole Taylor Swift thing happened.
Yeah, it did.
And so, like, that combined with this album, I was like, all right, I'm done with Kanye. And, well, like, peace out, Brad. Like, this ain't it for me.
Well, for the people,
even though I kind of liked 808s and Heartbreak, it just, like, was so different that I was like, man, you slipping.
For the people who were already off board the Kanye train by the time all the weird Republican Nazi stuff started happening, this was probably the point where they jumped off. Was that the 808 and Heartbreak? And it was purely musically. I mean, as we'll talk about, Beautiful Dark Twisted brought some heads back in. But a lot of people, especially, you know, whether you can say they're closed-minded or, you know, people just like what they like, but a lot of people were taken aback by the sharp departure in style that he went with. There was a lot of auto-tune. There was very little rapping on 808 and Heartbreaks, and it was a lot more about melody and, you know, and feelings and song structure and stuff.
And then we had My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, which I guess is 10 years old now. Maybe even 11 years old
11,
now.
11, yep.
Ah, it's messed up. I remember last year I was like, oh, we're going to do like a 10-year retrospective on the album. And then the coronavirus, and so I forgot. And so 11 years ago, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy came out.
I think this is his best album, personally.
Oh, yeah. No, I think it was universally acclaimed as like his probably his best work. I think because it sort of mixes, to a degree, some of his like later experimentation with the soul that drew people to Kanye in his early work as well.
I thought Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy was like the point that you made earlier about how he wanted to start making stuff that would work more effectively with stadium stuff after he saw Bono and U2. Like, to me, I feel like Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy accomplishes that by still being like hip hop as fuck.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's still boom bap. It's still like sampling. It's still bars. You know what I mean? It's not like it's not like, yo, we gotta have like the massive trumpet horn section. You know what I mean? To like pump up like a crowd of fucking, I don't know. I really like that album.
No, the album's great. I mean, in the closer with the Gil Scott-Heron sample from his Comet Number One, which was a piece of spoken word, sort of surrealist, about the African-American experience and the idealism of the American dream. As I was going back through the album, I was like, there's nothing really political here to discuss, I don't think. I mean, there's consumerism, there's all sorts of things that vaguely touch upon American life, which is touched upon by politics. But I thought it was really interesting that, you know, this particular piece that closes out the album, it's criticizing the 1916's revolutionary youth movement for failing to recognize the more basic needs of the African-American community. And even though it's edited and reduced down on the track, Who Will Survive in America, just like the last track on My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, it still kind of captures this idea, this persona, this African-American man who feels cut off from his country and his culture, which I think is really interesting. Like, knowing what we know today about Kanye, it's like kind of was like weirdly poignant. Like, it's like an opposite direction of what Gil Scott-Heron is talking about. Like, Gil Scott-Heron is talking about, like, oh, the revolutionaries. Well, no. I mean, the more I think about it, the more I feel like they're both kind of saying similar things in different epics and different ways.
But going about it differently.
Yeah, so like, yeah, Gil Scott-Heron is saying like, oh, these revolutionary people who look up to Che Guevara and, you know, who the people like the Young Lords or whoever who are out here like agitating for revolution, like don't give a shit about what black people are actually going through during this time. And I mean, to a lesser degree, I mean, Kanye is fighting, you know, the neoliberal Democratic Party. But similarly, saying like, y'all over there, y'all on the left are like missing out on like what we really need. And like aren't paying attention to the issues that are actually like important in our community. And so I was like weirdly poignant on an album that otherwise was just like a banger, but pretty purely aesthetic and just like fun to listen to. Like a really interesting way to close it off.
It's on brand because it's like, you know, Kanye was like a kind of poignant dude. You know what I'm saying? Like, not that anyone should have been looking to him to like shape their worldview or anything like that. But it's like, up until like recent years, it always had the aura of like, all right, that's like a celebrity guy who's doing celebrity stuff. And every now and then you hear him say some shit. It's like, oh, I fuck with that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So this brings us to his 2013. Was it 2013 or 2012? I think 2013.
2013? Yeah.
2013 album Yeezus, which, I mean, at this point, I'm fully off the train. But, I mean, it very much is still for the same musical reasons. It's not quite as out there musically as 808 and Heartbreaks, but it definitely still kind of felt like a departure from the more boom bap style that was going on in Dark Twisted Fantasy.
And at this point for me, I just like I was no longer appreciating the gimmicks.
Yeah.
So, you know, he had a run of merch during the Yeezus cycle that featured the Confederate flag prominently. And, you know, speaking out on the issue, he said, react how you want. Any energy you got, it's good energy. You know, the Confederate flag represented slavery in a way. That's my abstract take on what I know about it. So I made the song, New Slaves. I took the Confederate flag and made it my flag. It's my flag now. So now what are you going to do?
That sounds like a rich, deep setting.
I like wonder what like neo-Confederates would feel about that. Kanye West coming and being like, yeah, bitch, it's my flag now. I really can't imagine. But
I don't think that they would look at it with whether he actually really intends any nuance to it at all, but it's like, for them, it's just a cosign. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
yeah, I guess.
For
yeah,
them, for them, when they see something going down, it's like, oh, they want to take down the statue of General Lee from some government building. Man, why are these SJWs? I mean, even Kanye says it's not that big deal. It's not big of a deal. And, like, he likes the Confederate flag. Like, they're not reading into this. You know what I'm saying? They're not digging into those quotes any further than what it is. And in this day and age when everybody's, like, worried about their platform, or everybody's, like, talking about conservative platform and stuff like that, I just kind of feel like somebody with a platform like Kanye, you know, you can't always be the Mr. Magoo of, like, this sort of stuff where it's like, oh, I had no idea what was going on. It's like, nah, man. Kanye's a big boy, and he's a smart person, so he knows what he's doing.
Yeah. So let's actually get into the song New Slaves, which I think has echoes of some of what he was trying to get at in that quote about slavery being a choice. You know, 400 years of slavery, that sounds like a choice to me. Let's play a little bit of that real quick.
Come in, please buy mo. What you want? A Bentley, fur coat, a diamond chain. All you blacks want all.
But in the lyrics, you know, he's talking about how he's hearkening back to an era where, like, it was post-slavery, but black people were still kind of framed as or positioned, forced into servitude of various kinds. You know, picking, you know, not necessarily picking cotton. He does talk about that, but like, oh, you have to be the help, doing clothes for other people. And then he gets into, like, I guess being controlled by material things. Like, you know, you want a Bentley for a coat, a diamond chain. All you blacks want the same things. So saying, like, you know, once we escaped Jim Crow, once we escaped chattel slavery, like, still having this enslavement to materialism. But I think it's sort of like expounding on that thesis
right.
That came up with. Like, yeah.
But the thing is, at that time, he was pushing the materialism.
Exactly. He was, like, depending on people to buy the Confederate flag t-shirt.
This whole thing, this is on the, this is all during the phase where he was going at it with, who is it, like, Gucci or something? With Versace, with some fashion company, because he didn't get, like, his own line of something, and it was like, man, the fashion industry is racist because they won't let Kanye West have, like, his own line of something, and he was just make like, I invented the leather jogging pants. You don't remember all that stuff? Like, he was, like, pushing, like, blatant, like, vapid materialism at the same time that these were the points that he was making in songs like New Slave. Like, literally at the same time. Yeah. Same point in time. I'm sorry.
It's all good. No, I'm reading through the rest of the lyrics, and it's just, like, he later goes on, it's like, fuck you and your corporation. Y'all niggas can't control me. But it's like,
you work for Nike or Reebok or some shit.
You work for Nike. They don't work for you, bro. I'm sure in his head, he's like, oh, they work for me. Like, nah, nigga, like, they're shareholders. They sign your check. Yeah, they're shareholders run the company. I mean, there's a lot of interesting stuff in here. He talks about the DEA teaming up with the CCA.
What do you think of the album just in general?
I mean, in general, I kind of honestly dug this somewhat industrial vibe. I didn't give it too much of a chance of, like, repeat listens for it to really, like, sink in for me. But it wasn't bad. I just, like, didn't appreciate the gimmicks. I didn't appreciate the Confederate flag shit. I did not appreciate the song. It was catchy as fuck, but I didn't appreciate a song called Black Skinhead on here. Like, none of that shit was cool to me. So, I, like, you know, resist a little bit.
Well,
because of my morals, I guess. So I was like, I don't know. This is catchy as fuck, but I can't fuck with it.
Well, his next project would be a little bit of a spectacle, and I don't even think for any political reasons, but just it was just like a mess of a rollout. His album, The Life of Pablo, it was famously, like, released, and then after its release, he just kept making changes to it. Which I guess strikes a, you know, a more interesting question for the music industry as a whole. But still, fact remains, you know, album came out and then like 2 days later you go on iTunes and it has like two more songs added onto it. And then 2 days later you go by and it was mixed different. So now it sounds completely, you know what I mean? But that was pretty much the story of this one. But it just like his current album, Donda, it also had like a lot of hype surrounding it with like listening parties and things of that nature.
So something I have kind of mixed feelings, but like I appreciate and enjoy about his later discography is the sort of gospel influence. I mean, I grew up around gospel music. I think gospel music is kind of tight, frankly. I just think like the choral sounding, like the harmonies and things like that is like really dope. And so, I mean, I, to be honest, didn't listen to Jesus Is King just because like at this point I had sort of like, I mean, I probably heard it, but like I didn't really pay attention. Because at this point, I was just like, yo, yeah, because like I said, so on the U.S. charts, the album became the first ever to top the Billboard 200, top R&B and hip-hop albums, top rap albums, top Christian albums, and top gospel albums categories all at the same time. So yeah, it's not like
rapping
Christian
over gospel
album.
It's just like gospel singing.
I mean, it's a little silly. Like, he's got this one song that's like, I'm close, like, oh, you my Chick-fil-A, we closed on Sunday, like stuff like that, where it's kind of goofy and like funny in like a tongue-in-cheek hip-hop way, the way that, you know, we just make jokes, make metaphors that are a little, you know, I guess a little less strictly reverent in like a gospel kind of way. But no, it's just praising Jesus the whole time. Yeah. And so I never really got into it. Because, I mean, it's more so for me. What I appreciated about, like, some of, I guess the life of Pablo was that it combined the sound of gospel with, like, hip-hop content. When it gets really straight, like, as a non-religious person, it gets real straight into, like, the... You know, hallelujah, praise the Lord stuff.
Chance the Rapper kind of started it with that Coloring Book album, but where he was like doing the gospel rap shit.
Then,
okay, so, you know, again, you know, admittedly, maybe I should have done this for preparation for this episode. So bad on me in my journalism skills, but I have not taken the time to listen to Jesus Is King. Or really, you know, I can't say
dope.
That I'm like eager to hear Donda at all.
So yeah, apparently Donda, it was supposed to come out last Friday. Now it's supposedly dropping August 6th. He's still working on it. So we shall see how it goes. I didn't...
And that's sounding like it's going to be like a gospel one too?
Let's see real quick. Let's see what people on the internet say.
It's going to be mad funny when the small print says, all proceeds for this album go to the Stop the Steal rally.
So it sounds like he's going to be dealing with themes about, you know, his recent divorce. It's going to have some continued religious influence akin to Jesus Is King and things like that. But yeah, so it may have some of that gospel-y sound.
One of my friends knows somebody who was at that thing.
Oh yeah, they have COVID now?
probably, but they were just, it's the sort of person that you would expect to say, oh man, it was a life-changing experience. Mm-hmm. It was so great. This album's gonna change the world and yada 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 yada. So
okay,
Kanye fans are definitely amped up
Let them have their fun, it's cool. But yeah, that's it for us this week. We'll be, I guess, checking out Donda when it drops August 6th, just to see. Or not. I'll probably forget. August 6th will come and go, and I'll be like, oh, shit. I forgot.
Y'all niggas tell me when that shit comes on regular TV. I'll check it out then.
But what do you say? You feel like rapping?
Yeah, of course. Hey, Joel, can you drop a beat?
Here we go. Wait a minute. Rapper, right? Yeah. But pantyhose on his head, yelling out fashion is life. Lately, Ye's been flashing only half the lights, half the lights. Maybe he'll drop the album tonight, or maybe go live on the gram, manically cackling psych. Who knows what kind of state that Ye be in? For all I fucking know, he could be hanging out with Canadians and staying in the A again. Posted in Mercedes-Benz Stadium. What a way to live through what you want, never explain the shit. You gotta hand it to him. He says whatever he's got on his mind, and I appreciate a candid human. But when you getting played by Trump and Candace songs, you should probably ask yourself, man, I should plan where I'm going.
Hey. I'm Dope Knife.
I'm Lingua Franca.
And we are waiting on reparations.
Hurry up, Kanye. We got millions, bruh.
See you, help see me you out. Next week.
Help me out. I'm losing my insurance. Nah, okay. All right. We need a grant. All right. See you next week, everybody. Waiting on Reparations is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.